A63. Number 5B.
All right. Why should we be satisfied by finding out one's individuality, seeing that every manifestation of being is absolutely individual? Why should there be a further step? What is that further step?
Relationship.
Relationship?
With other ideas.
We had that in principle. No, that's not true. We had relationship of the ideas with the whole. Yes. Would it be enough to have an individuality and not to know that we have one? You see how the 6 days is always that day where you become conscious of creation. That's why man, even in evolution, man is the only one that is conscious of himself. A plant and an animal is not conscious of itself. It's not aware of itself. It just lives by instinct. The only one that is conscious of itself and knows itself and can analyze itself and has an introspect of itself is man, because he knows what is. Therefore, a further step is always necessary, that we are conscious of our individuality, that we know what we are. And the question is, does everybody know what he is? That's not so evident, self-evident. Most people do not know, or let's say practically we all don't really know very consciously what we divinely are. That's a very great step. We feel we have an individuality, but on live that individuality, not knowing what that individuality is, mostly it's just an idiosyncrasy and not true individuality. Because we are not conscious of the true individuality of our being. And therefore a lot of idiosyncrasies go along with us, with the true individuality, and then we are the ordinary mortal and stinker that we are, and the sixth day really would ask us and say, be conscious of your true individuality. Then you are man, then you are individual man. So that sixth stage is an important stage again, namely to become aware of what we are, to know who you are.
Max, every time you arrive at that point, wouldn't that be tantamount to arriving at a new structure of consciousness?
Yes, it gives a new structure of consciousness why would you say that?
Because each time that you come through those first five steps, you are coming through with a new creative idea.
Yes.
And that new creative idea restructures.
Yes.
And so your consciousness is restructured every time that you realize a new idea.
Yes. And therefore, in every situation, you have to have, so to say, the consciousness of a new individuality. That you are different. That another individuality of manhood has to be expressed. Yes. Which brings us to the next step, the last step, unity with God. Again, why is that necessary? Why is it not enough to feel that we know that we are God's image and likeness, to know what we are? Why is something more necessary?
You come to the universal sense there, don't you? That oneness with God, that oneness with the seventh day sense of love.
Yes.
The oneness with the universe.
Oneness with the universe.
Well, until we don't feel like we're apart from God, an idea of God's out here somewhere.
Yes. I think here unity with God, not so much unity with the universe, is really the point, so that you don't feel you are a conscious individuality somewhere outside of God, outside of being, or not filling up the whole of being. The moment you have that sense of being one with God, you feel that your consciousness is God's own consciousness, and not your own consciousness, but God's own consciousness. And therefore one gives up even that last point, that one feels one is operating with a consciousness apart from being. We have a consciousness of our own about which we are conscious, but if we put it back into God, we see that we are God's consciousness of Himself, and not our consciousness of our individuality. Which brings us to the really to the point where Jesus said, if you see me, you see God. They said, show me God. He said, why do we ask me? If you see me, you see God. That's the point. It is the climax of this unfoldment, that actually we begin with a little sense that there is a creative ability, that there is somewhere a little light flaring up and starting a creative sense, a creative ability, until at the end we see that we are God's own being. Yes. Are you very hot?
No.
Not
no.
so much.
No. We're okay.
We, you can do it, huh? Ah, just ask you because you are so quiet.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. So, can you see the flow of the whole thing? See that if we later on understand the order of the seven synonymous terms, we really can have then a terrific trust in the law of creativity, so that whenever an idea touches us, whenever a divine idea of mind touches us, comes into our consciousness, into our thought, comes like a little light, it's a creative light. If we know the law, then we know, oh, that little light has come from mind. It doesn't come from somewhere else. It doesn't come from my brain. It must have come from the divine mind. But if it has come from the divine mind, I know from last year's syllabus class, B1, that a synonymous term is never a synonymous term if it does not reflect all the other synonymous terms. So I know when an idea touches me and comes as a light, perhaps quite indefinite, but just a little touch of something that brightens up, I can know this comes from the whole of mind. It may not be very bright, may not have shown through a very clean window pane. That window pane within me may have been a bit dirty, but there was somewhere a little spot that the light could shine through. But so I still can see it's mind, the whole of mind, that is at work. And therefore I know that therefore that mind which brings me a little sense of a creative light, that mind is also spirit. And that therefore that little light will unfold, must unfold, especially when I know that mind is spirit. And I can see that therefore spirit will unfold that creative little light. And so I trust that unfoldment. And as it begins to unfold, by pushing, here something, there something, here ordering something, there channelizing something into another channel, here intervening with a situation and bringing some kind of new order, I begin to see that through all these ways and means of ordering things, spirit will come and bring forth soul's identity. that therefore the identity of that little spark will appear. Sometimes I have to wait. Sometimes I have to wait a week. Sometimes I have to wait a year. Sometimes I have to wait 10 years. Sometimes Mrs. Eddy had to wait 25 years, like with the monitor. Sometimes we have to wait a whole life until the identity appears. And the time is ripe, when the situation is right, the identity appears. So there is that law at work, either in a split second or in a whole lifetime. It's still that law at work which first says, mind says, I bring to human consciousness a little light, and just wakes up mortal soul out of the dream, shakes it up just for a moment, and just gives the sense of promise for a moment. And if he can't catch that and doesn't let it go, and know that mind is spirit, we tend that light, we culture that light, we love that light, we think about that light, we value that light. That's all spirit, you see, and so it unfolds. If it falls, suddenly new aspects come in, suddenly that unfoldment brings in new possibility, new situations, new outlooks, channelizes, all the various experiences until finally everything clicks together and the identity of it appears. Stands out, right out there and says, oh, here it is. Huh? Here we get it. Huh? But it's still an identity in conscious, in our understanding. It has not yet gathered its proof. It has not proved itself in the human life. It's only that the identity, the identity of the idea has appeared. But if I see then that behind mind, spirit, soul is a principle at work, because they reflect principle, I begin to see that now the principle of being will use that identity and begin to organize it, begin to classify it, to put it into a system. We put it into relationship, put it into so that it begins to link together with the surrounding, with the universe. That's principle. It begins to operate in that principle. As it begins to operate, I have classified it in that principle, and as it begins to operate in that principle, it slowly begins to prove itself as an individual manifestation of that identity. It begins to individualize itself in human experience. And that's why at that point it becomes a living identity. A living identity. No more like in the third day, just the concept of the identity. And so I can trust, you see, that that principle which is life, therefore that it will bring forth the living sense of that identity, which is always new, which is always ever new. Therefore, principle through life can restructure that whole system, always bring out the newness of it and the living sense of it. And so it begins to live. You begin to feel, now I got it. Huh? Now I have it. Now it moves me. And what does it move in me? It always moves in me that I become more and more conscious of the whole form of it. That I suddenly begin to see, oh, that's what it really means. Oh, now I see that it has a value in the universe, that it has a value, and the right value in the whole universe. And I feel the health of it, the saving power of it, that that idea is a savior to the world, that it helps the world, that it's a factor in the world, and becomes a world factor. For what? I say, for what? And you come to love and say, for the glory of God, not for my glory. not that I profit from it, but that it is for the glorification of that one God, unity with God. And I begin to see that that idea actually has never left mind, that it was always in mind, and through that whole evolution, it only showed forth the outer manifestation, but it has never left the origin, and that's love. Yeah? That's the law of creativity. We take a sequence that John Dolly gave us, the next one. He gave that sequence in 1938. It was at the time when he began to feel that the whole discovery he has made is actually a discovery of the science of all sciences, and therefore that the laws of creativity that would govern all the sciences must be scientific elements. And so we have here law, order, rule, system, method, form, plan or design, which are all scientific concepts. They are tools of science, which you can easily see, because every science has to do with these. Therefore, we can see that he is touching here, so to say, the science of sciences, or the proto-science, and says every science, whatever that science is, must be based on these scientific terms. There is actually no science that cannot operate without law, without order, without rules, without system, without method. You see, just not possible. So we find here one of the deepest order that he would give and show a sequence in it. Can we see that sequence? Perhaps this sequence is not always seen so clearly as we would like to see it, because not everybody is so familiar with scientific terms, with terms that are used in exact sciences, and so perhaps we have to see if we can grasp it just the same. Anyway, you know, that's, I think everybody knows, that any science is built first and all on laws. All right. Actually, in order to have laws, you have to have elements of the laws. That's clear. But the creative order always starts out from the fact that in being there are laws. If there would not exist laws, there would be no law of creativity. Only the fact that there are laws in being is giving us the assurance that there are also a law of creativity. So we have mind expressing itself as law. Now, can you see here very clearly how this sequence differentiates completely from the sequence of the third degree? See, the third degree started out wisdom, and he said, who has to have wisdom? We have to be wise. God is not wisdom. God is mind. God is intelligence. Wisdom means that we should reflect that intelligence, and in the human, reflecting the intelligence of mind means to have wisdom. And we could see that purity is pure, to be pure in heart, to be that we have to be pure, that we have to build up an ark and pitch it. You see, they were qualities that appealed, so to say, to the human concept of man. Whereas here, in this sequence of law order, you can see there is no human connotation in it. It is actually the intrinsic nature of the synonymous term that are shown forth here. Can you see the difference? Only from time to time. I don't ask too much, but once a day, just nod with your head. Just once, you know. And I know somehow, yeah, you are still here. Huh? Yeah. Can you see the difference? Huh? Which means, what I want to point out with it, that we must see that this law of creativity operates on many levels in Christian Science. Huh? On the level of Christian Science, there are many, many levels, huh? Sub-levels. Huh? And you can see very easily that they are very different. That wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding is a completely different level than if I talk about law or the rule. Because law or the rule is the innate, the intrinsic nature of the synonymous terms. Whereas wisdom is not the intrinsic nature of mind. Not at all. It's a translated form, translated way down to the human level. So I come to a rather high level within the range of Christian Science, which says mind really acts according to laws. It doesn't just act at random, it just doesn't act spasmodically. It acts according to laws. It means that whatever mind acts is a lawful action. I can know from where it goes out and where it leads to, and that it does lead to somewhere. I said that it leads to somewhere. Well, what is the next step that it leads to somewhere? Think. What is that which is the very first You see, order is heaven's first law, so to say. A law operates always according to a direct line. Huh? It always operates according to the law of cause to effect, for instance. Huh? So it begins to operate according to an order. And therefore, law, seen from the standpoint of spirit, becomes order. Order is still a law, because you can't change it. So in being there is a definite law of unfoldment, and so you have law from the standpoint of spirit becomes order. You see? From the standpoint of soul, from the standpoint of soul, where the greater governs the lesser, which is again a law. So from the standpoint of soul, the greater governing the lesser, that's another law. What kind of law is that? That law is a rule. The moment you have the specification of law applied just to one thing, namely the great, the governing, the lesser, you get the rule. Always, when a law is applied to a specific case and can find a specific law, we call it rule. So you have, say, if you take an illustration, you have rules. You have house rules in a college. You have rules for the swimming pool. You have rules for the tennis court. They are all rules, but all based on laws, fundamentally. But because they are applied to different experiences or different applications, you can specify the laws applied to that specific application, and therefore we call them rules. So they rule in one case, they don't rule in another case. The rules for the tennis court don't rule for the swimming pool. Can you see? And the rules of the swimming pools don't apply to the rules of the house maintenance or anything like that. And yet, they are all laws laid down. So, law, at the point of spirit we have seen, becomes order. At the point of soul, it becomes rules. That's very important in Christian Science. If we have big laws of mind and we apply them to specific cases, namely, let's say, what should you do when you feel sick and when you feel depressed and when you feel uneasy? What are the rules? Mr. Teddy would say, give you quite a lot of rules and say, negate your pain, or she would say, rise in the strength of spirit to resist everything that is unlike the divine. She would give you these individual indications and rules how to behave when you feel sick. And these rules do not apply when you are happy and healthy and jolly well, and you don't say, well, resist your pains and deny your pains. So they would not be laws, they are rules. And yet, all these rules rely on laws. Because the law of mind would say that as soul, you don't have any sensation. The law of mind would say as soul, that you are always a spiritual identity and never have a body, therefore you don't need to care about the body, you don't have to deny the body, therefore you don't have to deny the sensation of the body, you don't have to deny the pains of the body, you see? But applied to the human, we have all these wonderful rules, rise in the springs of spirit, and things like that, which we'll see in the chapter on practice, where she gives them by the dozens. These are rules. So we see that law applied to specific fields of activity become rules. Yes, I think we have to stop.